Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Today, we hear what Chinese officials are doing after a shocking attack at a train station in Yunnan province. The government has blamed separatists for the violence. Officials have increased security in China's capital as two major meetings take place. Then, we turn to South Asia and the issue of public health. Vaccination efforts have almost ended the risk of polio infection in most countries. But the World Health Organization says the virus is still a problem in a major Pakistani city. China's answer to a deadly attack and the fight against polio are next on As It Is. China is increasing security in the capital, Beijing, at the same time its leaders gather for talks. The political meetings come just days after an attack at a train station in southwestern China. The violence left more than 30 dead. June Sims has more in this report from VOA's Bill Ide in Beijing.
Chinese officials say separatists from the Xinjiang area were to blame for carrying out what officials described as a highly organized terrorist attack. The incident took place Saturday in the southwestern city of Kunming. Chinese media say attackers used knives to kill 29 people. More than 140 others were injured. Officials say police killed four of the attackers. State media have since reported that Chinese officials held an emergency meeting to increase safety and security in the capital. Some of the measures include increasing anti-terrorism and anti-explosives awareness. Officials also called for strengthening security on public transportation, such as buses and trains. Security within China will be a subject for discussion for the Chinese officials meeting in Beijing. China's military spending continues to rise, but the country still spends more on security at home than it does on defense. Since 2009, the security budget in Xinjiang alone has grown from $250,000 to $1 billion. On Monday, top officials met in the Great Hall of the People in Beijing for the opening ceremony of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. The conference is a government advisory body of 2,200 officials. Another meeting, called the National People's Congress, takes place at about the same time. Chinese call the gatherings the twin sessions. The two are marked by a huge increase in police on the streets. After the attack last weekend, many people are demanding better security. Others are also saying the government should strengthen anti-terror laws. James Liebold is a visiting professor at Beijing Foreign Studies University. He says the attacks surprised the government and raised the danger of ethnic tensions.
I think they're particularly worried about the sort of Han backlash. There's a lot of people talking about how this is reminiscent of 2009 when you had the Han Uyghur riot in Shaoguan in Guangdong, and then how that spilled over to Urumqi and that, you know, terrible street violence. The government's worried not to, to let that get out, to lose control of it.
In 2009, ethnic riots shook Western China. The violence left about 200 people dead. They included both Han Chinese and members of Xinjiang's Uyghur Muslim minority group. Professor Liebold notes that in late December, Chinese President Xi Jinping described his ideas for a new plan of action in Xinjiang. However, officials have yet to present the details of that program. I'm June Sims.
The World Health Organization has declared the Pakistani city of Peshawar the world's largest reservoir of endemic poliovirus. And WHO officials fear Pakistanis could face travel restrictions unless steps are taken immediately to stop the disease from spreading. Christopher Cruz has more.
Researchers studied all the cases of poliomyelitis in Pakistan last year. The researchers found that almost every case could be linked genetically to the poliovirus often reported in Peshawar. They added that all test samples collected from different parts of the city have shown the presence of the highly infectious virus. Polio mainly affects children under 5 years of age. The virus is passed through food or water. The virus reproduces in the body and later invades the nervous system. The disease can sometimes lead to paralysis, with loss of muscle control in part of the body. The WHO study found that 90% of Pakistan's polio cases could be linked to the virus in Peshawar. In addition, 12 of the 13 polio cases in Afghanistan were also linked to the city. Elias Duri serves as the WHO's emergency coordinator for polio in Pakistan. He says local officials need to take urgent action to strengthen vaccination campaigns. He says the situation in Peshawar not only threatens the gains Pakistan has made against polio, but could also harm international efforts to stop the disease.
Unless the polio eradication program in Pakistan is able to curtail the transmission in Peshawar, the expansion of the virus to other places will not stop. So it's critical that Peshawar, the way it is behaving now, really be able to find ways of interrupting these transmissions that have been consistent throughout the years.
He also noted an increase in deadly attacks on vaccination campaign workers in and around Peshawar and in other areas. Taliban militants often attack polio workers in Pakistan. The militants accuse them of being American spies or part of a plot to keep Muslims from having babies. Most of the attacks have taken place in Peshawar because the city is close to the country's tribal districts. Extremist groups have bases in those areas. Elias Duri did not reject the possibility of other countries ordering travel and visa restrictions on Pakistan if there is no quick improvement in the situation. In neighboring India, no polio cases have been reported for the past 3 years. Starting this month, all visitors to India from Pakistan are required to show a record of their polio vaccination. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for joining us. Let us know what you want to hear on A Future As It Is. go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, and click on Contact Us. Join us again tomorrow for As It Is from VOA Learning English.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. Many people say they cannot start their day without first having a cup of coffee or tea. People say these drinks help them think clearly and feel more awake. This is because of caffeine, a substance found in some plants. Caffeine helps to give a jump start to the nervous system. Now, a new report says it may also improve long-term memory. The report was published earlier this year in the journal Nature Neuroscience. Mike Yassa is a neurobiology professor at the University of California, Irvine. He and other researchers wanted to know if caffeine could improve what they called memory consolidation. They asked a group of individuals to learn something new. Then, the same people were given caffeine, the active ingredient in coffee, tea, and chocolate. Professor Yassa explains.
So after you learn anything, it takes some time for that memory to strengthen and become resistant to forgetting. And over the first 24 hours is actually where most of the forgetting happens, so that's really where we wanted to intervene with caffeine and see if we can help reduce this forgetting to some extent.
He and the other researchers worked with a group of 160 people who were caffeine-free. On the first day, all the subjects were shown pictures of everyday objects. They were asked to identify whether the pictures could be found inside the house or outdoors. Some of the subjects were then given a caffeine pill. The others were given a placebo, a pill containing an inactive substance. On the second day, all of the subjects were asked to look at more pictures. Some of the images were exactly like the ones they had seen 24 hours earlier, but other images were different. And a third group of pictures was similar to the first group, but a little different. The participants had to decide whether the images they saw were the same or different from the ones on the first day. Professor Yassa says their answers helped to show the effects of caffeine on memory.
When they actually had to make a memory judgment and say, is this the same item I've seen before or not? That was a really important bit of information for us. And we find that if they're on caffeine, they're much more likely to make the right decision.
He says those who took the caffeine pills had a 10 to 12% increase in their ability to remember the objects. The amount of caffeine the researchers used in the study was similar to one strong cup of coffee. Professor Yassa says pills with a little more caffeine also increased memory, but resulted in some participants appearing more nervous. And that's the Health Report from VOA Learning English. For more stories about health, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Christopher Cruz. Thank you.
Welcome to Explorations in VOA Special English. I'm Mario Ritter. This week, we tell about one of the most recognizable objects in science fiction, the laser. It is one of the best examples of how technology can go from the science of the future to everyday use in a short period of time. Faith Lapidus and Steve Ember tell us about the history and many uses of the laser.
Laser stands for Light Amplification by Stimulated Emission of Radiation. The idea behind lasers is complex. Just how complex? Consider that it took the mind of Albert Einstein to discover the physics behind the laser. Theodore Maiman succeeded in building the first working laser in 1960. Mr. Maiman worked at Hughes Research Laboratories in Malibu, California. A laser fires a light beam. Before the laser, scientists developed a similar device, a MASER, which stands for Microwave Amplification by Stimulated Emission of Radiation. A MASER is basically a microwave version of the laser. Microwaves are a form of electromagnetic radiation, similar to but shorter than radio waves. The best known use of masers is in highly accurate clocks. In the 1950s, researchers in the United States and Russia independently developed the technology that made both masers and lasers possible. Charles Townes was a professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He and his students developed the first maser. Russians Nikolai Basov and Alexander Prokhorov did their research in Moscow. Their work led to technology important to lasers and masers. The three men received the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1964.
The idea of a thin beam of light with deadly power came much earlier. By the end of the 1800s, the Industrial Revolution had shown that science could invent machines with almost magical powers. And some writers of the time were the first to imagine something like a laser. In 1898, H.G. Wells published a science fiction novel called The War of the Worlds. In it, he described creatures from the planet Mars that had technology far beyond anything on Earth. Among their weapons was what Wells called a heat ray. Listen to actor Orson Welles describe the weapon in a famous radio broadcast of The War of the Worlds from 1938.
I shall refer to the mysterious weapon as a heat ray. It's my guess that in some way they are able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity. This intense heat they project in a parallel beam against any object they choose by means of a polished parabolic mirror of unknown composition, much as the mirror of a lighthouse projects a beam of light. That is my conjecture of the origin of the heat ray.
H.G. Wells' description is not too far from the truth. All lasers have several things in common. They have a material that supplies electrons, and a power source that lifts the energy level of those electrons. And, as Wells guessed, many lasers have mirrors that direct light. Laser light is different from daylight or most electric lights. It has one wavelength or color. Laser light is also highly organized. Light behaves like a wave, and laser light launches in one orderly wave at a time from its source.
You are listening to the VOA Special English Program, Explorations.
The physics of the laser may be complex. Still, it is just a story of how electrons interact with light. When a light particle, or photon, hits an electron, the electron jumps to a higher energy state. If another photon strikes one of these high-energy electrons, the electron releases two photons that travel together at the same wavelength. When this process is repeated enough, lots of organized or coherent photons are produced. In Theodore Maiman's first laser, a rod of man-made ruby supplied the electrons. A more powerful version of the flash on a common camera was used to lift the energy state of the electrons. Mirrors on either side of the ruby rod reflected and increased the light, and an opening at one end of the rod let the laser light shoot out, just like the flash ray of science fiction hero Buck Rogers.
Our flash rays are working like lightning now. They destroy everything in their path.
Industry put lasers to work almost immediately after they were invented in 1960. But weapons were not first on the list. The first medical operation using a laser took place the year following its invention. Doctors Charles Campbell and Charles Coster used a laser to remove a tumor from a patient's eye at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital in New York City. Since then, doctors have used lasers to cut and remove tissue safely with little risk of infections. Other health uses include medical imaging and vision correction surgery. Eye surgeons use lasers in LASIK operations to reshape the cornea, which covers the lens of the eye. The reshaped cornea corrects the patient's bad eyesight so he or she does not have to wear glasses or other corrective lenses.
Lasers have made measurement an exact science. Astronomers have used lasers to measure the moon's distance from Earth to within a few centimeters. Mappers and builders use laser technology every day. For example, drawing a perfectly level straight line on a construction site is easy using a laser. Energy researchers are using lasers in an attempt to develop fusion, the same energy process that powers the sun. Scientists hope fusion can supply almost limitless amounts of clean energy in the future. Lasers have also changed the way we communicate. It is likely that laser light on a fiber optic network carried this explorations program at least part of the way to you if you are reading or listening online. Superfast internet connections let people watch movies, and send huge amounts of information at the speed of light. Manufacturers have used lasers for years to cut and join metal parts. And the jewelry industry uses lasers to write on the surface of the world's hardest substance, diamonds.
Since 1974, the public has had direct experience with lasers at the grocery store checkout line. Laser barcode scanners have changed how stores record almost everything. They help businesses keep track of products. They help in storage and every detail of the supply process. Experts say no company has put barcode technology to better use than Walmart, based in Bentonville, Arkansas. By 1988, all Walmart stores use laser barcode scanners. Highly detailed records on its products and how they were selling helped Walmart keep costs down. Today, Walmart is the world's biggest corporation.
Lasers are found in many products used almost everywhere. Laser printers can print out forms and documents quickly and are relatively low in cost. They are required equipment for offices around the world. If you have a CD or DVD player, you own a laser. Laserdisc players use lasers to accurately read or write marks on a reflective-coated plastic disc. A device turns these optical signals into digital information that becomes music, computer software, or a full-length movie.
Over 100 years ago, writers imagined that beams of light could be powerful weapons. Today, lasers guide missiles and bombs. For example, pilots can mark a target invisibly with a laser. Bombs or missiles then track the target with deadly results. And yes, American defense companies are working on giant laser guns, recognizable to science fiction fans everywhere. But there are technological difficulties. Scientific American magazine says huge lasers turn only about 20 to 30% of the energy they use into a laser beam. The rest is lost as heat. That has not stopped scientists from working to perfect powerful lasers that one day may be able to shoot missiles out of the sky.
Your announcers were Steve Ember and Faith Lapidus. For transcripts and audio of our programs, go to voaspecialenglish.com and visit the classroom to find activities for English learning and teaching at VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.